Broadcasting to New York City, Los Angeles, Chicago, Sydney, London, and around the world, this is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio 101.3 KPCG. We're online at kpcg.fm, live link at thetrumpet.com as well. This is Trumpet Radio Live, the first one, 2017, Monday edition. The new year has begun, according to the calendar anyway, with more terrorism. Some details about that. An interesting story here about a Washington, D.C. court ruling that may threaten First Amendment rights. We'll have information about that. And under 3 weeks left, President Obama in the closing stretch of his presidency. Details about that and more this edition, Trumpet Radio Live.
This is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio Live on 101.3 KPCG. And we're online at kpcg.fm, live link at thetrumpet.com as well. And don't forget to use the TuneIn app if you'd like to do that. I'm Dwight Falk and Grant Turgeon here today. 2017 has dawned, much like 2016. It doesn't feel that different. A lot of fireworks around here on New Year's Eve. And kind of threw me off for a split second. I thought, what is all that noise? I was like, oh, right, people shooting off fireworks.
Yeah, it did take a while to figure out why anyone was shooting off fireworks. New Year's Eve is not really much of a thought for me.
No, I don't. I guess, you know, at big city centers, they do that. Where I grew up in Wisconsin, I don't remember anybody doing anything. Of course, it's really cold, too, as far as fireworks. But here, I think there's so many, and people haven't saved up from 4th of July. I guess any excuse to shoot off fireworks. I like fireworks, so I wouldn't mind if every night at, you know, 8 o'clock people just shot off fireworks for 30 minutes. Kind of nice way to wind down the day.
Exactly.
And move
Stress
on.
Stress relief.
Yeah. So I watched just a little bit of the the New Year's stuff. They have, you know, their concerts or whatever at Times Square and other places. And my wife and I were just sitting there looking at it, and we were commenting to each other that we must be getting really old because I just don't get it. Some of the musical acts or whatever you want to call them. It's either like the stars of yesteryear that are kind of washed up, no offense, and then or it's like these new ones I've never heard of, and I don't even know what they were doing. There was this one guy, he's supposed to be some rapper, I guess, and I couldn't even discern like the melody, or he was yelling something, and I don't know what he was mad about. It was I'm just getting older. I don't get it.
It's not you, just you who feels behind the times. I'm 24 and I feel way out of the loop.
But you know, it's funny because I looked at that and I thought, I don't mind being out of the loop on that one. I don't want to know what that guy was yelling about. But anyway, so, and then of course there was a little bit of controversy, I guess, with Mariah Carey. She was trying to lip sync or something, and the track didn't work right, and so a little bit of back and forth between her and the production company there about what went wrong. But I think she still got paid, and I think she got paid $2 million.
No problems there.
No.
That would be an easy gig then. She didn't even have to sing the song, right? She just walked off stage.
Right. I will do it. I will do it for half that. $1 million, I go out there.
Easy.
Sing, pretend to sing, walk off the stage. It'd be even better because people would be like, who's that guy? The ratings, the Twitter would light up. I don't even know what's
going
on.
You'd be like the next Ken Bone at that, that presidential debate, the adorable man in the red sweater.
Right. Yeah, he was really popular for about 10 seconds, and then people started looking into his life, and they found out he was a pretty bad guy, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
They dug into his private life, and they're like, wait a second now. So
this adorable man is capable of such heinous atrocities.
Yeah, he had an online presence that was less than desirable, from what I recall. But it's funny, you said that name, and it took me a second for it to register. I'm like, who is that again? Oh, right, the guy from the...
I was trying to think of his name on the spot just now as well. It's already fading from memory.
There's a lot of people like that kind of hit that fame, you know, real quickly, and then they're gone. Not like us. We're around. We've been around. We've been around for a while.
We're a main presence.
Main presence here on KPCG. Over the weekend, one thing that you did, we talked about this a couple weeks ago, or last week, Starbucks had some new drinks out. You were on assignment to get the chocolate tuxedo, a specialty drink, and you accomplished your mission.
That's right. That's all I texted you Saturday morning was mission accomplished, and you automatically knew what I was talking about.
Yeah, I assumed that's what it was.
Of all the things we talk about, you just knew.
Yeah. So how was it? What's the report?
Well, I mean, it was delicious. I was slightly disappointed because I went through the drive-through line, and that actually, by the way, wrapped around the store, so we had to wait quite a long time.
Yeah.
And then, of course, since I got it to go, I had a lid on top, and so it took away the, I guess, the intimate or the elaborate design on top of the drink.
Oh, yeah.
It had the same rich chocolate taste that I was expecting, but it didn't have the half white cream and the half black cream piled up on top.
Huh. They blew it.
I know. I was like, I was thinking maybe they could make an exception and not put a lid on it for me. I'll drive slowly.
Are you you feeling okay today then?
I feel great.
Good. Okay. It, how many calories do you think was in that bad boy?
Multiple thousands.
10,000 calories. Who knows? Those can be upwards of 1,000 sometimes, depending. Mm. So, well, good. Tastes all right. I guess that's around for another day or two, and then it's done.
Right. There's several versions of it. I got the mocha version. I think there's also like maybe a stronger espresso version, and then just a hot chocolate one, which doesn't even have any coffee in it at all. I had the mocha, and that one, very good. I mean, you could tell it was like a hot chocolate, but it had sort of a kick to it as well.
So those are a couple of specialty Starbucks drinks that they're doing, I guess, just for a few days.
I think it's already, it might already be done because I think it was going through yesterday.
Oh, okay. So it's over with.
Just in time, I got.
You blew it. Well, the thing to do now would be to show up and see if they'll make one anyway.
Right.
Because
how hard could it be?
There is kind of like a secret Starbucks menu where if you know what to ask for, some people can make it. We went through a drive-thru years ago, and somebody had told me about this drink called Cough Drop that they would make, and like a variety of tea and things. If you had like a sore throat, it was not that it's good for you, but it might be somewhat soothing. So my wife's like, well, ask him about the cough drop. And I didn't want to do it. I don't like those sort of I just want to give him the order and go.
It almost feels illegal.
Yeah. So I asked the guy. I said, hey, can you make a cough drop? And he's like, sure. And I got up to the window and he said, how'd you hear about that? And it made me nervous. And I pointed at my wife. I'm like, oh, she told me. As if I had done something wrong. So it was fine. It was pretty good. So that's a drink you can get that's not on the normal menu, I guess.
You think they might still have it?
I think so. I think it's as long as the person knows how to make it, you know, they can do it for you. But anyway, if that's an important thing to you, you can.
Yeah, well, that's really intriguing to me. There's a few restaurants like that that I have heard have sort of an underground menu, but I've never experienced it at all.
Yeah, and I always have that fear that I'm going to get in trouble for some reason. Like, you shouldn't know about that, you know, but it was fine. The one of the things that happened right away as the clock struck midnight roughly on Saturday evening, Sunday morning, was terrorism again. Headline from the weekend, ISIS now claims Istanbul nightclub attack that killed 39 as manhunt continues. ISIS claimed responsibility for the shooting rampage at a New Year's Eve celebration at an Istanbul nightclub that killed at least 39 people and injured nearly 70 more, including one American, as authorities continued a manhunt for the assailant. The gunman entered the popular club early Sunday morning armed with what authorities described as a long-barreled weapon, some sort of gun. Surveillance video footage of the moments leading up to the shooting spree shows the shooter firing his weapon as he approached the club. He killed a policeman and a civilian outside, and then he went in and shot a lot of the victims in the head, close range. So 39 killed, about 70 injured. ISIS claims responsibility, and they still haven't caught the guy.
That's quite a high body count, 39 as well. And that it seems like a few times recently they have hit dozens of people or even up into the hundreds at times. But, yeah, really those are some, I guess they would call them, pretty successful attacks. The first thought I had when you mentioned that story was the fact that this is supposedly all done because of religious motivation. And it's just, I guess for some reason today, it's just pretty shocking that these people are just prowling around looking for the chance to kill people and they think it's justified.
And these nightclubs, I mean, we had the one in Orlando as well. And I guess there's probably been a few others. It doesn't seem like you should be able to shoot that many times before somebody would grab your gun or something, but maybe it's because of the environment in there. Usually it's dark, a lot of music, you know, a lot of people. I guess it would be hard to know what was happening. Maybe that's why they target it, those places. Maybe that's why they have such a high kill rate or number. But usually people can't kill that many before somebody takes them down or tackles them or something. But But again, 39 killed and then almost 70 injured. So they don't know what type of weapon it was either, you know, at this point.
It does seem like the idea of a lot of clubs is to sort of overload the senses, which kind of would make people maybe less aware of what's happening. And especially when the music is loud and pumping,
yeah.
Maybe the first several shots wouldn't even be recognized in there.
Yeah, so that might be part of it. But that was Saturday night, Sunday morning. And then Fox News has this one from today, at least 36 killed after suicide bomber targets crowded Baghdad market. These things tend to happen in Iraq a lot, it seems like. A suicide bomber driving a pickup loaded with explosives struck a bustling market in Baghdad on Monday, killing at least 36 people in an attack claimed again by the Islamic State group hours after French President Francois Hollande arrived in the Iraqi capital. I don't know if they were trying to send him a message or what happened there. The bomb went off in a fruit and vegetable market that was packed with day laborers, a police officer said. Another 52 people were wounded. So these are just, they're attacks, and I guess they send a message of some kind, terrorism. Just people minding their own business, going about their day, and then they get blown to pieces. It's a terrible situation. And in a place like Iraq, you'd have to wonder every day, you know, is something going to happen today? Because it happens so frequently.
And it's kind of hard to figure out who their enemies are when they're attacking Arab nations. Maybe they want to take over that territory. I'm not really sure, but I thought their idea was to go on the attack in Europe more, and then if possible, America as well. Iraq and Turkey are not Europe or America, so they're just really attacking whoever they can.
Yeah, it seems to be just going after different areas. There was, of course, there's been quite a few terror attacks in Turkey last year, and it's hard to keep them all straight. You almost have to get a big wall chart and write down all the countries and all the attacks because there's been so many. Even in talking, I think last week on the Trumpet Daily Radio Show with Stephen Fleury, he was talking about some of the things that had happened in 2016. And I mean, it's easy to forget because there's been so many things. You think, oh, wow, yeah, that and that and that. So it was a really violent year. And I guess there's always a hope the next year will be better. And it hasn't taken long and they're right back to their terrorist ways.
Yeah, their body count is already almost 100 with just those two attacks, and we're in the second day of the year. So they really have gotten off to a fast start. And probably a big reason why they're so successful is because they attack anywhere and everywhere. They don't like the West, but they also don't like certain Muslims, and they also want to take territory for themselves. So they have a bunch of different goals in place. So it's not like they're just attacking one specific enemy every time, which then means that no one is particularly always prepared for those things.
You know, it's really interesting too. I turned on, I think it was NBC on Saturday night, it just a little bit of that Times Square, you know, New Year's thing. And I'm trying to think of who the host was. It doesn't matter. Anyway, the guy that was hosting the show, he came on, you know, and typically it's a party and they're trying to be excited. But the first thing he said was, he talked about how there was so much security there. You know, don't worry, we got a lot of security here, things are fine. And that really struck me that, wow, that's the first thing he has to address. You know, it's a big party, but hey, don't worry, we got a lot of security, so we're safe here. And that just shows what a impact terrorism has had. It affects even the parties where people have to talk about being safe while they, you know, go out and have their good time.
Exactly, because really, they are easy targets when they're out there, and terrorists know the exact holidays that Americans like to celebrate, and Americans tend to go out in public and celebrate. So really, they do need a lot of security in those situations, and it just kind of really just sets people up for attacks when they're out there like that.
Yeah, thankfully nothing occurred there, but that's the weird thing about terrorism. It just shows up randomly, you know, in different places.
And that is the main goal, just make people constantly afraid of it.
Right. I mean, because the fact that they had to address it, the fact that they had to spend all the money on security, well, they won,
yeah.
You know, in that sense. If you remember back in this past year, there was a few incidents that occurred at various amusement parks, accidents and so forth. And there was another one on Friday. 21 people were stuck 100 feet in the air for over 7 hours. That's a thrill ride. That was after a ride malfunction in California at Knott's Berry Farm. They firefighters had to propel 100 feet, rescuing 20 passengers. And one ride operator at Knott's Berry Farm in California on Friday afternoon, according to a statement released by the theme park, No one was in any medical stress, so they were okay. But about 2 p.m., the Sky Cabin attraction stopped approximately 100 feet in the air, theme park officials said in the statement released on their Twitter page. So you like a little thrill on the ride, but this might be a little too much.
Well, 7 hours, really, the possibilities are endless there, too. So it's kind of haunting to even think about what might have happened. You know, people must have needed to use the restroom, things like that. So,
or dehydration.
Yeah.
Or, you know, all kinds of things are just kind of freaking out.
Some people might get really mad and just start screaming.
I'm going to climb down this track.
Affect everybody else.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You have to stay calm. That probably is a complaint that people would have about amusement parks, is that you wait in line forever and then the ride's over so quick. Mm-hmm. No, not at Knott's Berry Farm.
They got their money's worth.
You got your money. A 7-hour ride. It's like Gilligan's Island. It was supposed to be a 3-hour tour, but it took years. And it's the same here at Knott's Berry Farm. So thankfully they were okay. I don't know what that ride is. I remember earlier this year, I think a coaster got stuck upside down. Now that would be far worse.
Oh, yeah.
If you're upright, maybe not so bad, but upside down, I can't even imagine.
Blood going to the head. That actually would be extremely painful.
Yeah. I don't know how long you can be upside down, but so I'm not sure what this ride is. I have not personally been to Knott's Berry Farm. I've heard that it's pretty fun, but not good publicity when you're trying to, have people come to your place. And so anyway, 7 hours stuck there on the ride. Got every penny worth, as you say. This is an interesting story from the New York Post. D.C. Court of Appeals global warming decision threatens First Amendment. A lot of back and forth about the validity of global warming. It says the court ruled that Penn State climatologist Michael Mann's defamation suit against National Review and the Competitive Enterprise Institute can go to trial. That should send shivers, they say, down the spines of anyone who cares about open debate and challenges to scientific findings. This guy, they ridiculed, basically, this scientist's findings. He didn't like what they said, so he's suing them, and the court's going to hear the case. So it's kind of an interesting story as far as First Amendment rights go.
Yeah, and that National Review magazine that he wants to sue is a pretty prominent conservative news source. So once again, we see the attack against one side, but not against the other.
The man's suit claims that bloggers Mark Stein, who I think is pretty popular on NR's site, and Rand Simberg on CEI's site defamed him when they slammed his global warming research, particularly his famous hockey stick graph, an illustration of how temperatures have recently surged. And they were pretty cutting in their remarks. They accused Mann of having, quote, molested and tortured the data, and got a little bit rough with maybe the way they talked about what he had done. However, like they say, maybe it was harsh, maybe it was over the top, but they still are free to write their opinion, and that's what they wrote. It was an opinion. It was a blog. They said they didn't like his data. They ridiculed it. And now they're being sued for it. So it really does, if even just this, it would make you think twice about critiquing something.
Yeah, because there is a huge difference there between lying about what the data he actually found is and then saying that you disagree with the data that he actually found. They weren't spreading any malicious lies in their reporting there. So really, that is part of free speech. You can give opinions whenever you want to about whatever you want to. And just because it's not in line with someone else's opinion doesn't mean that you can't say it.
And I wonder even if the court would even bother with it if it wasn't about global warming, yeah. You know, if it was just like an entertainment piece or something. I think that, you know, that's a really pet project of a lot of people, the global warming idea. And so I wonder if that's the reason they're taking it up. So it'd be interesting to see what comes of it. Maybe nothing will come of it, but just the fact that the courts are willing to hear it, you've got legal fees, etc. It is kind of a warning that, hey, you better be careful what you're critiquing, and you don't want to go against the popular notions of, certain segments of society.
Yeah, and really that's what we've seen a whole lot the last few years, is just the liberal side being extremely authoritative in enforcing their own viewpoints and applying them to other people who would disagree. That is a really disturbing trend, and we've seen it in pretty much every policy angle that they take, whether it's homosexual marriage or this case with climate change or gun control, any of those issues, it's like they'll just say you're an idiot and apply the law against you as if you're an idiot if you disagree.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see what comes of that case there that's in the D.C. Court of Appeals. And there's more about that at the New York Post if you want to take a look at that. And we'll update you on that story if more comes about from it. So, of course, these two stories happened. Man alleges ageism after getting banned from Starbucks for asking a teen barista on a date. Ooh. Ageism. It's a new thing. You get discriminated against because of your age.
Actually, I think I remember us joking about that a few months ago. Ageism, at some point, coming out as a real issue.
It's a real issue now. A 37-year-old man says he was banned from a Starbucks in Washington State, which isn't that big of a deal. There's one every block. After asking a 16-year-old barista out to dinner, and that's according to the CBS Spokane affiliate KREM, the man, who is not identified because he has not been charged with the crime, said he was at a Starbucks in Spokane last week, and he wrote a note asking out a barista. He said, "I was flirted with by a barista." That's a funny thing to say. "I was flirted with." "For some reason, she thought I was funny," he said. "Said I was funny. So I gave her a note to see if she'd be interested in dinner." He said he went back the next day, and a police officer told him he was banned from the Starbucks. So they were on the lookout for him.
Wow.
He's 37, asked out a 16-year-old. I can see where there'd be some concern.
Yeah, maybe if she was 18, it wouldn't have been a big deal at all, because then she would have been not a minor anymore.
So anyway, he's not allowed in that one, and he says it's because of discrimination due to his age. He says, "I know the female Starbucks barista was of legal age to date, so I'm not really sure on that in terms of maybe that is the legal age. I'm not sure." He said, "I broke no laws. I merely took a chance with my heart." Yes, we've all taken a chance. He said, "I'm tired of hearing the word creep." So apparently he hears the word creep a lot. I wonder why. He says, "I have a whole webpage dedicated to the age gap love." So he's into that. He likes the much younger ladies, apparently. He asked his friends on Facebook to call Starbucks and complain. No one did. They just ridiculed him on Facebook. So they're not his real Facebook friends. They're two Facebooked friends.
Wow. He's really deep into that subject with trying to date really young girls.
Yeah.
What's wrong with women his own age? Or at least anywhere close.
It's a little creepy. Yeah, it's funny because he's a real proponent of this, probably when the girls are much younger. What if it was a much older woman that wanted to date him? Would he be excited?
What if he were 16 and a 37-year-old woman was interested in him?
Yeah, it's kind of an interesting thing. He said, a Starbucks spokesperson said, "We have no tolerance for any such inappropriate behavior or harassment, and we will continue to support our store partners and local authorities investigating the situation." I do feel for the young girl. I mean, if you were working there and this older guy was giving you a hard time and he keeps coming in the store, it would be pretty nerve-wracking.
Yeah, I don't know that situation too well, but at least in that poor man's mind, he thought that they hit it off pretty well.
Yeah, maybe. There's lots of questions that need to be answered there. And so anyway, this ageism. I suppose there could be such a thing. I don't think this is a case of that. I think this is a case of creepism.
He should have taken a chance with his heart when he was 16, maybe, instead of waiting till he was 37.
Interesting. Here's another one from the course this happened. At least three injured after owner tries to put sweater on pit bull.
That's a bad life choice.
The pit bull doesn't want to be messed with.
Do you want to be hospitalized? Do that.
Don't put a sweater on him. Hey, that pit bull looks like he needs a sweater. It says a pit bull bit its owner and attacked two other family members in Florida after a struggle to put a sweater on the dog Friday. According to the Tampa Bay Times, the incident occurred around 2:30 p.m. The person's name is Brenda Guerrero, 52. She tried to put the dog on the sweater named Scarface. But the dog attacked her, gave her a Scarface, apparently. Her husband, Ismael Guerrero, 46, was attacked. Hey, that's ageism. She's 6 years older than him.
Exactly.
It ties into the other story. He was attacked when he tried to pull the dog off of her. Antoine Harris, 22, was attacked after trying to stop the dog by stabbing it in the head and the neck. Bad situation. All three were able to escape into the house while the dog remained in the backyard. And then the animal control came over and they tranquilized, they used a tranquilizer gun to put the dog to sleep, I guess. And so that's the situation there. They were taken to the hospital. The people were, injuries were serious, but not life-threatening. Moral of the story, don't try to put a sweater on a pit bull.
How could they even begin to think that was a good idea in the first place?
It's very strange. Pit bulls are dangerous animals. Yeah. There's a variety of opinions out there about them. I don't like them. I don't want them near me or my family because they kill people.
They seem to be the most dangerous dog. I mean, stories come up about them attacking and maiming human beings all the time. It's like even if you own a pit bull, it still could be you who is their victim.
Yeah. A couple of funny comments about it. One person said, well, I'd attack you too if you try to put a sweater on me in Florida.
Good point.
And then another one said, this is surprising. Pit bulls are usually known for nice things like baking cookies.
Yeah, when are we ever going to see a story of a pit bull being kind?
Pit bull saves man, pulls kid out of well. Yeah, no, you don't really see a lot of those. But just the human stupidity here of trying to put, those are vicious dogs, put a sweater on the thing. I don't know. Maybe people have done it. Maybe they've been able to do that at times. I don't understand the dog sweater thing because they have a sweater. They have fur, usually, or hair or something.
They have no issues in that area.
I've never seen a dog cold, really. I suppose it could happen, but we have a cat, and he just gets thicker fur in the winter. Mm-hmm. Just grows thicker.
Exactly.
And so we don't put a sweater on him. I wouldn't even want to try to put a sweater on a cat. They would scratch and bite you.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Unless you took out its claws and did something to its hormones so that it was, like, completely listless all the time.
You don't want to mess with the pit bulls. So that's an interesting story there out of Florida. There's always strange things happening in Florida. The Key of David program is coming up here in a bit on KPCG. Two segments today. Make sure you listen for those. Also, the Trumpet Daily Radio Show with your host, Stephen Fleury, from here in Edmond, Oklahoma. Did it live this morning, and there will be replays coming up. Also, the archives are online at kpcg.fm. Today, he talked about Chapter 1 of Ruth and played some selections from the musical that we had here at Herbert W. Armstrong College over the weekend, the Ruth musical. Widow's Mite was the name of that. And so some neat songs, the studio versions, the world premiere of those songs, and went through some of the great history there and the lessons for us from the first chapter of Ruth. So it was a pretty cool musical here at Herbert W. Armstrong College.
Yeah, extremely timely program from him as well. After three performances in the span of 4 days. So you can imagine a lot of those performers are pretty tired now.
Yeah, and especially because it's a pretty emotional story, and so it takes a lot of energy to convey that emotion, which was done very well. And so hopefully some of our listeners got to see that. If not, it will be, I'm sure it'll be up somewhere at some point. The music will be on iTunes and other places. So we'll have updates about that. And, of course, there's a lot of concerts at Armstrong Auditorium. You can go to armstrongauditorium.org and see what else is coming up this year. There's more on the way. You like French fries?
Oh, yes.
They're kind of an addictive food. It's hard to have just one French fry. I've never been in a point in my life where I said, I don't want any more French fries.
That's true.
They're very addictive.
Because they're really not that filling either by themselves.
No. They're just one of those things you can keep eating for some reason. Six surprising facts about French fries. It says, number one, nobody can agree on where they were invented. That's a big thing. The French, the Spanish, the Belgians all claim that they were the sole inventor of fries. Belgian fry lovers claim that they're called French fries because all Belgian food is appropriated by the French. So it's apparently a cultural war here. The French claim that street vendors on the Pont Neuf Bridge were the first to sell them in 1789. I don't know how you would know that. And the Spanish claim that the first European country to bring potatoes back from the New World, they have historical argument for inventing them. So nobody knows where they came from. I know they come from McDonald's.
And it sounds like the French won this cultural war because it's named after them.
Yeah. Maybe it's, yeah, it is. Number two, they say British chips are thicker than American fries. That's one of the differences. You might think that chips and fries are identical, save for the name, but visit a traditional British chipper and you'll see that they couldn't be more different. Chips are cut much thicker and slightly soggier and actually contain less fat than American fries because of their thickness. Hmm. You can go to some fast food restaurants. They'll give you a thicker fry or Brahms around
Brahms,
here.
They've got
thicker ones and some other ones too. I guess I prefer the thinner ones. But I could go either way.
Yeah, I like the thicker ones personally.
There we go. Well, we're going to have to agree to disagree on that.
Let's just have both.
Cultural war here. Number three, they contain more, let's see if I can say this word, acrylamides. Sorry if I didn't get that right, than just about any other food. Basically, it's a chemical compound that develops when starchy food is cooked at a high temperature. It's considered a potential carcinogen by the U.S. government and has been shown to cause tumors in the adrenal glands, thyroids, and lungs when consumed in high concentrations. So not the best for you. In a 2002 study, the World Health Organization determined that the intake level for toxicity was 500 times higher than in the average diet, but more studies are being conducted. So you'd have to eat a whole bunch of them, but mm-hmm. I guess over time it could be a problem. Number four, McDonald's has a lock on the market. About 7% of all potatoes grown in the United States are turned into McDonald's fries. That's amazing.
That is.
7%. Oh. The chain sells more than 1/3 of all fries sold in restaurants. There's something addictive about the McDonald's fry.
Mm-hmm.
And you remember that Super Size Me documentary where they had the fries and they just left them for a long time and nothing happened to them?
Right.
They didn't get moldy or old. They just sat there.
And that poor sad man who had to go to McDonald's for every meal and every snack for that whole month, every time he went up to the drive-thru or got in line, they would ask if he wanted his meal supersized. So he'd have to have that huge,
yeah,
almost tub of fries,
yeah,
every time he ate a meal.
It reminds me of, if you ever watched the Flintstones, the intro to the show where they pull up to that restaurant and they put like the huge rib of a dinosaur or whatever on the car and it flips the car over. It's just like going there. You want the supersize? And flip my car over. Unless you got an SUV. They say number five, Thomas Jefferson introduced them to America. Oh, good for him. Jefferson served, quote, potatoes fried in a French manner at a White House dinner way back in 1802. That's how they should be called. That's what they should be called today. Would you like some potatoes fried in the French manner? You mean French fries? Yeah, of course. Very polite, very official. Number six, they say don't steal fries from your significant other's plate. They say taking French fries off of a significant other's plate is supposedly one of the most common causes of quarrels at restaurants.
Wow.
Did you know that? Do you believe that?
Yes, I could see why, because it's with French fries in particular, when my wife takes them from me, it's like there's a slight moment of disdain, and then I go back to remembering that it's not important.
Well, and here's why I think...
Just with French fries.
But here's why it bothers people, and I think this is a common thing. It's because oftentimes, now this is a generalization, no offense, ladies, when you go to a restaurant, your wife, girlfriend, whatever, will say, oh, I'm fine now, I don't want any of whatever, and then they eat most of it off of your plate. And my thing is always, hey, why don't you just order your own?
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't telling you couldn't. It could be the drink, it could be the fries, it could be anything. And that's what happens. Now, I don't want any. And then eat half of yours.
That's a great
point.
If
you didn't want any, why are you eating half of mine? Order your own. I think that's where the conflict comes in.
And also, generally, if the girl does eat off the man's plate, then it's because she doesn't usually ask first either, because they're close. So she doesn't feel like she needs to ask.
It's like taking food right out of the mouth. You can't do it. It's a big issue, apparently. Maybe it must come up in the, you know, people going to counselors and such. You're having a problem here. It gets back to the French fries.
Yeah, it's such a basic, simple, trivial thing, but you could definitely see why that would cause some issues sometimes.
So those are some things that you may not have known about French fries. And now, of course, everybody's thinking to themselves, I want French fries. Delicious.
Sorry.
Yeah, sorry about that. You got a story for us here, Grant. Pretty interesting. We've got 3 weeks left. Under 3 weeks, Obama in closing stretch of presidency. He's been very, very active, causing a lot of headlines last week. It'd be interesting to see what these last 3 weeks hold.
Right. He's actually returning from his final Hawaii vacation in a couple hours, most likely. And he is now in the home stretch. So a lot of what he's trying to do is put the final touches on his legacy and then also possibly tie Mr. Trump's hands before he takes office. That's what a lot of what he is doing seems to give an impression of. He also told his supporters on Monday in an email that he'll deliver a speech on January 10th. So that's something that we can really mark the calendars for and see what he has to say there. And he'll be doing that in a big convention center in Chicago.
Okay.
He's saying that you know, basically they've had an amazing journey, and he wants to celebrate the ways that his supporters have changed the country for the better the past 8 years. And he also wants to offer thoughts on where we all go from here, probably because every one of them is devastated that Mr. Trump won.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see how it goes. I mean, Russia's, they've weighed in and they've told them to stop being bad losers and causing all kinds of trouble and so forth. Of course, there's been all kinds of regulations passed. I don't even know what most of them are. But we had a story last week about, I forget how many pages it was, just all these rules and regulations and everything. And so it's not a very smooth transition of power, at least not right now. And they're trying to save old legacy items like Obamacare and do other things. And so it's really telling. I guess you learn a lot about somebody in their last go around at something because they've got nothing to lose. So we really can see what they're thinking, what their motivations are in a lot of ways.
That's exactly right. And a lot of the comments on this article on Yahoo were basically saying he's working harder now in these last few weeks than he did his entire presidency. Probably not true, but you can see that there's a lot of bitterness toward what he's doing. The people have already elected a president who plans on taking the country in a totally different direction for the most part, and yet he's still trying to push things through his own way, much of it undemocratically, such as that resolution against Israel that he decided not to veto, I believe, last week. And then also he's planning a bunch of last-minute commutations and pardons of criminals, most of them who were given long sentences for drug crimes. How is that in any way helpful to put drug offenders back on the streets?
Yeah, it'd be interesting to kind of follow that that last one through there a little bit and see what happens to those people, you know, because in a lot of cases they end up back into legal trouble again. We've seen that happen with, say, a lot of illegal immigrants that have come in and been either released multiple times and, or just, you know, kind of come through the system, I guess, a few times, and then go back out and commit more crimes. So I know the presidents always do that towards the end. They kind of pardon some people, but and some people probably deserve it. But in other cases, they don't. And so that'll be interesting to see what happens there. Of course, the Israel thing, like you mentioned, is just a huge deal. And it'd be really interesting to come in for Donald Trump and his administration and try to, I don't know, move forward, pick up the pieces in some way. I think the U.S. has lost a lot of credibility with Israel and with a few other nations. And I don't know if you can repair that.
Right. And a lot of his actions seem to be intentionally undermining the democratic process. In the case of these criminal pardons, basically what he tried to do the last 8 years was address these issues through criminal justice reform, changing the law to lighten a lot of sentences. And largely he failed in doing that. So now he's just going to say, well, I'm just going to let these people out of prison, even though the law is not changed to accommodate what I want. And also, a lot of the things he was doing behind the scenes included trying to take over a lot of local police departments by saying, you know, submit to FBI regulations of your department.
Yeah, it's and then it's kind of funny, too, because in light of that, I think he came out and told President-elect Trump not to overdo the executive orders and actions. That's been really a hallmark of what he's done.
Right.
But, you know, it's easy to do that, say, yourself, but then if another person comes along with the same power, but you don't like their thinking, then, whoop, I don't want you to use all that executive, you know, authority and really abuse it. And I think it has been misused in the last, especially last 8 years.
Well, of course, in his view, using executive authority to the extreme is okay in his case because he knows what's best for the country, regardless of if the rest of we poor, ignorant Americans do not know anything.
Yeah.
That's kind of his viewpoint. But, of course, Mr. Trump should not do that because he'll use executive authority the wrong way.
You think there's going to be any surprises? Anything kind of out of nowhere the last 3 weeks?
Probably a pretty good chance, it would seem like. And really, he's able to tie Mr. Trump's hands in a lot of areas, and it's almost alarming that that's possible. I don't think we've seen it too much in the past, but there is almost a 3-month gap in between the president being elected and then the current president leaving office. And so there is some time if a rival is elected for something like this to happen. We just haven't seen it very often.
Yeah. Well, it's going to be interesting to see what transpires in the next 3 weeks. It'll be a very interesting time for sure. I mean, man, Last year, 2016, was such an interesting year. So many big things happened. You just have to wonder what does 2017 have in store? Mm-hmm. And I was thinking about that when I was watching some of the festivities, I guess, from Times Square and other places. You know, there was kind of, to me anyway, there was this sense of, they're trying to be optimistic and trying to be hopeful, but it felt like it was not really sincere. Like, mm-hmm. it didn't have that feeling to it. Times are changing.
Yes, and it's easy to see that Mr. Obama won't go quietly. That's something that is pretty much guaranteed, whether it be in these last 3 weeks or also when he becomes a private citizen for the first time in a couple decades. It doesn't seem like he's just going to fade quietly into the background. He'll have a lot to say on a lot of current events, even as he no longer holds a public office.
Yeah, it's a really good point because, if you look at him before he got into the presidency, he was kind of off the radar. I mean, he did some things, obviously. He was a senator, I guess, and voted present multiple times.
That's it. He didn't vote either way.
Yeah, I mean, he was kind of, I think, careful to just come in without a lot of background story. I mean, it was there if you cared to look, but for those who didn't care to look, which was the media, he's just kind of this, who is this guy? Hey, he's a real hopeful fella. But we haven't really seen him out of the presidency yet as a very well-known individual, like he will be now. So it'll be interesting to see what he does do.
Exactly. And there's some hypocrisy evident in just the way he's transitioning power over to the Trump administration. He has been on record numerous times saying how helpful George W. Bush's administration was in helping the Obama administration and transferring things over to them. And yet he's not really doing the same thing for the Trump administration, even though he has said he would. The Obama and Trump administrations have clashed repeatedly because the Trump team has, for example, asked for information about government employees, which I think it's because he wants to cut back on government waste and see where some jobs may be unnecessary and cut back on those. But the problem is some of those areas that Trump thinks are unimportant are climate change and minority rights overseas. So President Trump would probably cut jobs in those areas, and therefore the Obama team does not want to give information on those employees.
Yeah, I saw a headline, I think last week, about how the federal government was scrambling to hire a bunch of people, thinking that they're going to be, there'd be job cuts. So, that'd be interesting to see too. Boy, that'd be quite a thing to look into, wouldn't it? Just see all the different jobs that are out there and which ones are necessary. I'm gonna take a guess here and say that you'd find some wasteful spending, just as a guess.
Right? Didn't we used to have maybe a couple thousand in the entire federal government, and now it's several million who work for the federal government?
It's a whole lot, yeah, for sure. And then, all those departments have really been grown over the last few years, and purchasing weapons and all kinds of strange things for departments you wouldn't think would need them.
Yeah,
it's not military. It's just these
Are we stockpiling so many bullets? Yeah. In these innocuous departments. Yeah,
it's a really strange thing. So, it'll be interesting to see what happens here. Like I say, the last 3 weeks, and then even moving forward, there certainly is division in the country, and it's about a 50-50 split as far as what people think. And it's not being healed over, that's for sure.
No, and a lot of these actions Mr. Obama is taking right now, really kicking into overdrive before Mr. Trump takes office, definitely you can't see them necessarily healing the divide in the country. You can't see his attempts to block ocean drilling or declare new monuments or further empty out the Guantanamo Bay prison as efforts to unify the people. Basically what he's trying to do is entrench his legacy. So hopefully he looks a little bit better when the historians write about him in the future.
Yeah. Legacy issues. Interesting to see. So that's a good write-up. You can check out more about that if you want to. The last 3 weeks of President Obama's presidency. What will come from that? That's an interesting write-up. Of course, when a new calendar year rolls around, everyone thinks about things that they would like to do to change and improve, and then, of course, they don't do it. But some people do for a while. Here's a write-up from Fox on 7 things you should try to quit if you're doing this currently. Number 1, they say you should quit smoking. I think people know that. Also, quit e-cigarettes, too. That was kind of the thing where people, I think some people said, well, the e-cigarettes aren't as bad for you, but they're quite bad. And they've done more research, and they're really pretty horrible. So quit the cigarettes.
Yeah, it would make you wonder how something like that, electronic like that, could satisfy a craving without it having something that would give you a similar rush.
Yeah, they say these electronic cigarettes are touted as a safe alternative, but they contain nicotine and nearly 29 other known carcinogens that are released when they are ignited. And they are been called a significant public health risk. Traditional cigarettes are associated with lung cancer, heart disease, and lung disease. But they say if people smoked, if they quit, sometimes that can heal. So, but anyway, these e-cigarettes are not any better. There's a, I think they call it vaping too, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's that store just down the road that sells it, and it says vape like you mean it.
Yeah.
So it makes me laugh. I'm like, is that a problem? People aren't vaping like they mean it?
They're just too laid back about it. I don't really understand what vaping is. Is that kind of the same thing, e-cigs?
I'm not sure exactly what it is, something along those lines. But anyway, I remember actually seeing people do those in like the mall. I think they've outlawed it since,
yeah.
But people walking around with those, and I thought, what are you doing?
Yeah, I thought maybe possibly that might have even a connection to marijuana or being like a marijuana substitute instead of just a cigarette substitute. I'm not really sure. I haven't looked into it, though.
Yeah, it could be. I'm not up on it. I'm not up on all the new stuff. But anyway, it's not good for you. You can pretty much...
We never used any of the old stuff.
Nah, didn't use the old stuff.
Of course we're not caught up on the new stuff.
Another thing they say that people should stop doing, this probably affects more, is they say, quit mindless eating and fast food. Obesity and obesity-related illnesses, they say, cost our healthcare system nearly $150 billion last year. And leads to high blood pressure, high cholesterol, et cetera, et cetera. I think we all know that. Nearly one in three Americans, including children, are considered obese now. They say if we don't make changes soon, it is estimated that half of us will be considered obese by 2030. That's pretty startling, 50% of the population. So one of the things they say, of course, is diet. That's one of the big things. And people will sit down to watch TV. They usually just start eating. And usually it's not good stuff. You don't say, hey, where's that bowl of carrots? It's the chips.
Yeah, there's something about TV that does make you hungry. Maybe it's because we know subconsciously that we're actually doing nothing, so at least eating is doing something.
I don't know why it is, but it is. You do feel like you should be satisfying some sort of food desire, even a lot of times not being hungry. It's just something to have. Of course, if it's a sporting event or something, there's, I guess, a little pressure there to have something as well. Yeah, so you have to be careful with that, they say. Number three, a habit to maybe get rid of is turning off the screen. Rather than have real conversations during family outings, many, they say, are individually engaged in online activities. See that all the time, of course. Electronic devices consume an enormous amount of free time, and screen obsession has resulted in a generation of young Americans who have lost the art of conversation. That's true. True enough. Sometimes I have to tell my kids, I'm like, you're talking to a person. This isn't a TV show. You need to respond in some fashion. Like, you're not watching a show here.
Exactly. Yeah, I think it can be easy to justify using screens when alone, but to me it always has seemed awkward to just pull it out when there is a big group of people around, because, I mean, that really does show people that you care more about this device than about them.
It's interesting, too. I wonder what the statistics would be on, say, when people pull out their phone, how many are actually checking something relevant? Because if I'm going off of my own self, very rarely. Like, if something relevant is on there, it surprises me. Like, oh, that's actually something I should... it's just checking the news, or... Not that that's bad, but, I mean, checking a sports score, or just... It's a habit, you know? And it can take over more time than you think, more of your life.
Yeah, it's not usually a crucial work email or phone call, so we're just checking the internet. And because of the 2% of the things that are really important, we have these devices, but then we use it 98% of the time for something else that is far less productive.
The American Academy of Pediatrics recommends limiting young children's screen time to less than 2 hours a day. Monsters. As for older kids, they say excessive online activity has been linked to cyberbullying and social isolation, leading many teens to develop depression and other mental disorders. Time spent on devices indoors also reduces physical activity, which contributes to the obesity epidemic. It all kind of goes hand in hand, and then exposure to screens late in the evening can lead to sleep disturbances and disrupt your circadian rhythms. So that's true. I try to remember that. It's hard to remember that, I guess, but or it's hard to follow through on it. But it is better if you read a little bit before you go to bed. That's a very helpful thing for your sleeping.
It does help a lot, and it is, that's actually one of the harder ones to apply, is making sure not to check a screen. I think it's a lot of people say like 1 hour before bed in some cases. That can be pretty difficult not to look at a screen at all for an hour before sleeping.
Yeah, for sure. I just sleep on a giant cell phone, so that's feels that way sometimes. Number four, they say, here's something you should do moving forward. Go to sleep. Our cells repair themselves, and new neuronal connections develop in our brain, improving cognition and productivity when we're asleep. According to multiple studies, the average adult needs approximately 7.5 hours of sleep per night to optimize performance. I apologize, I didn't get that much last night. That's why I am subpar in what I'm doing right now. They say children need more, and the elderly tend to need a little less. Some studies have shown that adequate sleep can prolong life. In 2010, research showed that women who got less than 5.5 hours of sleep had shorter lifespans than those who got 6.5 hours of sleep or more. I guess you could say, yeah, but you lived more. You were sleeping half the time. It depends, I suppose, on how you look at it. But, yeah, I always feel better. I mean, everybody knows that. You feel better if you get a little more sleep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've been going to bed at 9 lately for a while now, and it feels pretty amazing.
Getting up at noon, it's great. how many hours of sleep is that?
My 15 hours of sleep every night.
I have to get my 15 hours in. Number five, they say, if you're going to burn the candle, burn it at one end, not two. 43% of Americans suffer negative health consequences due to stress, which can lead to headaches, upset stomach, elevated blood pressure, chest pain. Man, that's making me stressful just thinking about that. Our bodies release hormones, including cortisol, adrenaline, epinephrine in stressful situations that can increase heart rate, so on and so forth. I think we've heard a lot of that before. So try to get rid of the stress in your life if you can. Number six, they say you should get off the couch. Thousands of people die every year due to physical inactivity, which tends to increase with age. The World Health Organization estimates that 2 million deaths worldwide are directly related to sedentary lifestyles. Sedentary lifestyle greatly increases the chances of becoming obese and can worsen anxiety and depression. It's really hard because modern life is kind of this, sitting, watching, looking at a screen, not a lot of physical activity. I mean, you really have to kind of step out of the normal routine to make some changes to your habits.
Yeah, at first it can be hard to even imagine why a life of doing nothing could lead to more stress, but probably because we know we should be doing something. There are some responsibilities that maybe we're putting off when we're being sedentary. So that can be a big part of it.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, it's procrastination, right? Mm-hmm. You know, leads to anxiety. If you go back to your school days, if you just did your assignment, you feel a lot better than putting it off and having to deal with that anxiety. So, and then lastly, they say you should eat breakfast. They say eat your breakfast specifically. I guess don't eat someone else. they say it may sound trivial, but eating breakfast can have lasting positive effects on your health. When we eat a healthy, well-balanced breakfast sometime in the 2 hours after we wake up, our bodies begin to burn calories right away, changing how we metabolize sugars and helping maintain healthy insulin levels. Skipping breakfast can lead to frequent snacking during the day and overeating at dinner because the prolonged fast since dinner the night before releases large amounts of the hunger hormones. And so you can have some problems there. That's one of the things I always say. Eat your breakfast. Probably not the sugary cereal, the ones they advertise at the end of cartoons. So it's part of your complete breakfast and complete garbage, maybe.
Along with the orange juice that's full of concentrate,
yeah,
as well. So if you took away the actual, the juice and the grains of the cereal, you just have piles and piles of sugar left behind.
Yeah, they always show you that same picture. It's the cereal, which, you know, whatever it is, it's like junk food cereal. And then, like, say, a huge glass of orange juice and then, like, two huge pieces of toast, like, all this stuff. I'm like, that's a lot of food for anybody. But then, yeah, most of it is just sugar. So that's not part of your complete breakfast.
Yeah, they usually don't even put eggs on the screen.
Yeah.
That's the weird part.
Well, they'll tell you, yeah, that's the thing. Oh, don't eat those eggs. That's bad for you. But go ahead and eat this big bowl of sugar smacks or whatever they're called. Is that an actual cereal? It might be. I was trying to think of something.
It sounds like one.
Wasn't an actual cereal, but that probably is one. It's probably the knockoff brand of something that is out there. But anyway, those are some of the things to maybe try to do as you head into a new calendar year. There's always lots of time where people, they try to advertise and sell different ideas and thoughts and products to get you going in different ways. I got an email from Nike, you know, just an advertisement. They said, quit exercising and start training. I'm nice. Like, training for what? I'm not even exercising. Now you want me to train? Am I going out on a mission that I don't know about? Or they sound like a threat of some kind.
The military draft is coming back.
Yeah, I don't know.
Be ready.
I didn't think anything was changing, but apparently I need to start training for something. So that's some of the stuff going on today in the world. Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio Live. Myself, Dwight Falk, Grant Turgeon. Have a great rest of your Monday, beginning to 2017. We'll see you back here tomorrow.
You're listening to Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG.